being an extrovert and being socially anxious, that's just my life, man.
Oh, so you're an extrovert or socially anxious?
Yes, yes. Being a kid, being a teenager, I think I was chronically understimulated.
And what did that look like? How did you feel? How did you know that?
Lower energy. It felt more like depression. Like I wasn't doing the things that made me feel alive.
Once you show up with other people, you want to be there. There's like a craving within you. There's a hunger. But when you get it, sometimes it's really difficult to deal with.
Yeah.
The first time I heard the phrase socially anxious extrovert, I got really confused because it seemed like a contradiction. How can you be socially anxious and an extrovert? If you're an extrovert, doesn't that mean you love hanging out with people? So I teamed up with Dr. Ali Mattu, who first taught me the phrase, to explore what a socially anxious extrovert is, what it looks like, what it feels like, and how to deal with it. So I hope y'all enjoy. Let's dive right in.
So I heard you mention something which was really fascinating to me, that extroverts can be socially anxious. And I thought that was incredibly fascinating because at first I was like confused because I thought the whole point of being an extrovert is that you really enjoy hanging out with other people.
Yeah.
And I sort of think about people with social anxieties, people who don't enjoy hanging out with other people. Yeah. So those seem to me to be like opposites.
Yeah.
So I'm really curious, like, what do you, like, can you explain, like, can you be a socially anxious extrovert?
I'm going to answer your question by answering like three different questions.
Okay, cool.
All right, let's talk about extroversion and introversion first.
Okay.
And my understanding of this continues to evolve and change. I used to think about it as extroversion is you like people and introversion is you don't like people, which is such a extrovertedly biased way of thinking about it, right? And we live and work in the United States, which is much more of an extroverted, biased society, right? If we were
networking.
Too much. If we're in South Asia, it might be a little bit different. If we were in Japan, it might be a little bit different, right? The more collectivist societies are a little bit different, especially like how emotions are expressed in social situations and social expectations are very different in different cultures. But we live in an extrovertedly biased society. And my view of extroversion and introversion was very extrovertedly biased. Like extroverts, good at people. Introverts, terrible at people. Then it evolved more towards extroversion is this bias towards the outside universe, and introversion is this bias towards the internal universe. And there's some people on those extremes, and then there's a lot of people in the middle that can kind of, depending on
ambiverts.
The situation. Yes. Depending on the context and the situation and the mood and all of that. And that's what I used to think. And this kind of evolved from my own experience becoming a full-time clinician, which I'm not anymore. I'm not a full-time clinician. But when I was full-time practicing, I would see a ton of people in the day. And then I would come home completely exhausted because I felt like my social battery was beyond depleted. Here's my understanding of extroversion and introversion now. I still think it's a spectrum. I still think there's a lot of people in the middle, which depending on context can be nudged in different directions. But I think extroversion now is you're deriving pleasure from things that happen in the outside context. Sometimes that means social, maybe deriving pleasure from the warmth of interpersonal experiences, the joy, the surprise, the novelty of good conversations. But it also can come from the outside world. It can come from nature. It can come from other things. Versus introversion, which I think is being able to derive more pleasure and enjoyment from like the internal universe or from more solitary things as well. That's how I kind of think about it right now. So we've got the spectrum, right, where if we want to really make it basic, it's does what happens outside give you joy Or does what happened inside give you joy? Mm. I think that's simplifying it.
Yeah.
But for our purposes, I think that's fine.
Hey, y'all. If you're interested in applying some of the principles that we share to actually create change in your life, check out Dr. K's Guide to Mental Health.
And so we start by understanding what literally is meditation. How does experience shape us as human beings? How do we strengthen the mind itself as an organ? And so by understanding our mind, we understand a very, very simple tool, a crucial tool that we have to learn how to use if we want to build the life that we want to.
So check out the link in the bio and start your journey today.
I think that that's a really good, and we'll get to this in a second because I've got a couple questions for you, but I was trying to figure this out because, I was trying to figure out how can you be extroverted and socially anxious? And the place that I went to was actually neuroscience.
Yeah.
So I started-
It's a good place to go to.
Good place to go. So what I sort of started exploring is, okay, hold on a second. What is extroversion in the brain?
Yeah.
How do we know what is the difference between an extrovert and an introvert? Is it even a real thing neurologically? Mm-hmm. Because these concepts were originally, I think, developed by Carl Jung.
Yeah.
And he wasn't a neuroscientist. But so what I found was really interesting, and it kind of mirrors what you're describing, is that the brains of introverts and extroverts are pretty different. So if you look at like there's a level of cortical activation that is different between introverts and extroverts. The really fascinating thing is that extroverts require a higher level of external stimulation to activate their brains.
Yes.
So there's a really fascinating experiment where if you take a single drop of lemon juice and you give it to an introvert and you give it to an extrovert, a single drop of lemon juice will cause a far higher salivary response in an introvert.
Yeah.
And a far lower salivary response in an extrovert.
You just described my marriage.
How so?
My wife is very much an introvert.
Okay.
I am very much an extrovert. And I've always understood her as someone who I would define as a super taster. I don't make that definition. I mean, it's a term from psychology, but she is much more acutely aware of stimuli, whether it's in the environment or in the food.
That's hilarious because that's my marriage too, but it's the other way around.
It's the other way around.
I'm the super taster. Yeah. So literally like, I've had a conflict with my wife for coming up on 20 years now where like basically she puts way too much lemon in the food.
Yeah.
And so I never realized like, oh, I was like, I read this experiment and I didn't even think that like I'm so sensitive to lemon. I'm a super taster.
Yeah.
So I taste all kinds of things in food that she doesn't taste.
Yeah.
Whenever she makes food, I think it's over-seasoned.
Yeah.
And whenever I make food, she thinks it's under-seasoned.
Yeah.
And it really does come back to this idea where like if you look at the brains of introverts and extroverts, an introvert, a small amount of external stimulus creates a large internal reaction.
Absolutely, 100%.
And with extroverts, so they require a large amount of external stimulus to create like an internal response.
Yes.
So their threshold of like signals from the outside, they can handle a lot more.
Handle and need.
That's the other great point. So the other really interesting thing is that extroverts, their dopaminergic response requires a higher amount of sensory input.
Yes. And so this is why it is – we work best when there's diversity of minds and diversity of experiences in teams, right? In families, in organizations, in work, you need all these perspectives. This is one of the problems with the United States, and I think one of the problems with many more collectivist societies is we're more biased towards
one or the other.
But you really need both.
You know, here we are describing what an extrovert is,
yeah,
what an introvert is. So what I'm curious about is you say you're a socially anxious extrovert.
Yes.
How does someone know whether they're a socially anxious extrovert?
I did not know for a very long time. Because here's what happens for people that might be on this trajectory is that first thing to show up is probably going to be some level of social anxiety.
Okay.
And so what do people do when they're socially anxious? They end up avoiding situations that trigger that social anxiety. Well, for a socially anxious extrovert, that means you are probably also avoiding situations that are much more extroverted experiences. So the kind of situation where an extrovert might thrive is there's a lot of sights, a a lot of sounds, a lot of people. There's a lot happening. There's a lot of novelty, unexpected things happening in the environment. And those are the kind of situations that are really going to fuel you up when you're an extrovert. But if you're socially anxious, those are also probably the kind of situations where you're going to avoid. Now, maybe you might do something like Times Square in New York City, which, yeah, if you're, for all the New York people watching, it's not a place that you want to go because it's so much. But if you're visiting, if you're a tourist, it can often feel so great and you can feel so alive because there's so much happening, there's so much stimuli, and there's no expectation of socially performing.
Okay.
So if you are someone who loves these environments where there's a lot happening and there's no expectation to perform, and you also avoid social situations where you feel like you have to perform, you feel like you might be judged, you feel like you might be evaluated and rejected, then you might fit this category. But a lot of people who are extroverted, socially anxious people avoid all of those situations, including the ones that they probably need, which are the much more heavy stimuli, big crowd environments.
Yeah. So what is there like, I'm still kind of curious about how would you know, right? So what you're describing is like, okay, how would an introvert with social anxiety be different from an extrovert with social anxiety?
Yeah. Okay. So some people might, let's talk about the introvert one, introvert, social anxious. Someone who's an introvert and socially anxious probably does not like social situations, would probably prefer to be in much smaller groups or by themselves. They are also probably someone who is much more easily overwhelmed by a lot of stimulation. They get their little dose of social, they're happy, they move forward, right? Someone who is more of an extroverted, socially anxious person, they need more. And they probably, a good measure of this is, do big environments with a lot of stuff going on, do those end up leaving you feeling rejuvenated? Like, put the social aside for a moment. And let's think about that Times Square environment. If you're in this environment where there's a lot happening, does that invigorate you? Okay, if yes, then you're probably more extroverted. Now, are you someone where when you feel like you have to socially perform in those environments, is that really difficult for you? And, you know, you want to connect. You're looking for that connection. You're looking to be in those kind of environments. But that feeling of performance is really difficult for you. You avoid it. That's probably extroverted social anxiety.
Yeah, so that's I was kind of thinking about this too, and what I sort of like was trying to understand. So I saw some fascinating research. So, you know, you're kind of saying, I love this example of Times Square because there's a lot of stimulus, but you're socially anxious. And so I think you're tunneling down into something really important. If you like being around people and it feels relieving to like not need to perform, right? Yeah. Because that's what the social anxiety really is. It's like this desire to perform. And then when I started looking at it from like a neuroscience perspective, I discovered a couple things. So the way I kind of understand it, let me know what you think, is if you're hungry and nauseous, that's the way I would think about extroversion with social anxiety, right? You crave it.
Yeah.
But when you get it, sometimes it's really difficult to deal with.
Yeah.
So people like, so if you really want to hang out with people, so the drive to hang out, you're not content at home by yourself. So you're sitting there, you're at home, you're like, this is boring, I want to do something, seeking a lot of stimulation. You want to be out there with people. Theoretically, you could enjoy, or you do enjoy being with other people. But there's this other layer that once you show up with other people, you want to be there. There's like a craving within you, there's a hunger. But there is also like a suffering that comes with it. Because the second that you show up, even though you want it, it makes you really anxious.
Yeah, that metaphor is a great one. And it's how I often share this with people is, and I didn't start sharing this with people really until we had our first conversation about this, because then I started to clue into, oh man, this is not a common idea. But it's like you love to swim and you're afraid of drowning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's so similar to to your metaphor right there. I would say this is absolutely true for a lot of people. And where being an extroverted socially anxious is different from being an introvert socially anxious, there's a lot more FOMO. Mm. There's a lot more fear of missing out. There's a lot more a desire to share more of what's on your mind and feeling like you can't and worrying about how other people will perceive you. You know, one of the biggest challenges of social anxiety, one of the biggest changes that needs to happen is a reorientation of what social situations mean for people. For someone who's more introverted, we have to help them from seeing social situations as a total waste of time, something I don't want to do, something that's scary, to something that can be useful and something that you need to kind of learn how to deal with these social situations. Mm. For an extroverted person, we don't necessarily have to do that. They want to be there. They want to participate.
So like what I'm kind of hearing is like, do you have to convince, like if I had a patient and I was trying to decide, okay, is this an introvert with social anxiety or an extrovert with social anxiety? How much do I have to convince them that social activity is like really like you got to learn how to like this stuff, you got to learn how to handle it versus how much is there that natural drive? And then what we're really focusing on is relieving the anxiety piece.
Yeah. So, There hasn't been a ton of research done on this, but the studies that have looked at social anxiety and personality variables, like the Big Five, one of which has social extroversion and introversion on it, it's a very small percentage of people that show up into an office. Well, there's a small percentage of people that show up to get help and are able to. But of those that do and have social anxiety, few of them are extroverts with social anxiety. Most of them are introverts. So just statistically speaking, you probably have an introvert with social anxiety.
Yeah, so there's an interesting – I stumbled on an interesting reason for that. If – let's say I'm an extrovert and I love social interaction.
Yeah.
I crave social interaction. I want to leave the house. But the second I go to the party, I'm worried about how I look. I'm worried that other people are judging me. I really feel like dancing, but I'm terrified of going on the dance floor.
Yeah.
That's like a really interesting kind of diagnostic question that – I've started to think about, like I've talked to patients of mine who I realize now were extroverts with social anxiety. And one of the key things is like they're people who want to be on the dance floor but feel absolutely terrified of being judged.
Yes.
And so here's the really interesting thing. They develop a very, very interesting way of managing, which is substances.
Yes. So we're going to get into that.
Yeah,
yes.
When I go back to like college, right, there are some people who love parties, but they hate parties without drinking or getting high or anything like that. And what they have to do is they crave it, right? They're extroverts. Yeah. So they show up at these parties and you'll notice there may be people in your social circle or maybe you're like this, where the second they show up, the first thing they've got to do is start drinking.
Yeah.
And that's because the alcohol affects the parts of the brain that are causing the anxiety, but leaves the extroverted parts of your brain, which are actually completely different, like not completely intact. So there's this pattern of people who is actually socially anxious, loves to party. And why do they love to party? Because when they party, they have substances on board that basically self-medicate the anxiety and allow them to actually be extroverted and sort of satisfy that hunger.
Which is really tragic, because the more you drink, the more likely it is for the anxiety to get actually boosted, especially the next day. That's this great term called hangxiety, right? So that's very common. That definitely happens. A couple of points to that. So one, for kids and teenagers, they might not be at this point yet, where they know they love to party, where they know they love to go out, because the dominant experience for them has been the social anxiety, which has put a wall, a barrier from them accessing the extroverted experiences that they want, that they crave. So they haven't gone beyond that wall, and they don't know yet that all of these experiences are really invigorating for them. There's more of a global avoidance to a variety of situations. So that was my experience, Dr. K. I did not know I love all of these things. So for me, being a kid, being a teenager, I think I was chronically understimulated in ways that I needed that stimulation.
And what did that look like? How did you feel? How did you know that?
Lower energy. It felt more like depression. Like I wasn't doing the things that made me feel alive. I would spend a lot of time at home. I would spend a lot of time with my family. I wanted to feel more alive. I wanted to feel more active. And I felt slow, reserved, and I felt like something was wrong with me, which is social anxiety, right? It took a long time until I had a few random surprise kind of situations in high school. I accidentally took public speaking. I thought it was going to be a class where we study famous public speeches, like, you know, JFK, Martin Luther King, all this stuff, and then we write essays about them. And so when on the first day of class, I show up and Miss Hayes, the teacher, says, "Welcome to public speaking. Where are you going to face your fear of public speaking?" I freaked out. I ran to the counseling office to try to drop the class. And the counselor said, "You can drop it. You just need to ask the teacher's permission." And then my social anxiety kicked in. I did not want to ask the teacher for permission. So I did what a lot of people with anxiety do, is I stuck with it. And I thought, I'm going to somehow get through this whole class without public speaking. But that class changed my life. And yeah.
I'm so curious whether, you know, what part of you was attracted to public speakers in the first place?
Yeah.
Right? So like kind of thinking right. about, even if you didn't know what it was, what is it that appeals to you? Why would a child who is so socially anxious seek to learn about public speakers who are in the spotlight in such a safe and academic way?
This is where this can become yeah. my therapy session.
Just one
I thought. Was really inspired.
Yeah.
I was really inspired by these people, especially, JFK and Martin Luther King are the two that stick out in my mind, because as a kid, these two individuals changed culture, and they changed culture for the better. I'm a huge space geek. And so for me, JFK was the one that really got us to the moon and said about all of those changes. So I was fascinated by these people and their ability to inspire a large amount of people towards good. Now, is that what I wanted and I aspired to do, or I was fascinated by it? I don't think I was thinking that deeply. I think that's probably was there. And if I had a good counselor, therapist, psychiatrist.
I think it has to be there, because yeah. now you're literally someone who has a YouTube channel that tries to affect millions of people by using your powers of public speaking for the benefit of humanity.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Don't need a doctorate to make those connections. Yeah. Yeah. No, I think it was there. I think I wanted to be, of course, I would have loved to be that kind of person then. I never thought I would be, but I wanted to be close to that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. But I was not someone who had those experiences. And so when I took that class, and you know, Miss Hayes, the teacher, was basically doing brilliant behavioral therapy, where that classroom was hyper focused on learning about anxiety. Small groups, small social situations. What do you think is going to happen? Do the thing in a safe environment, and then process what actually happened. Make predictions, gain real world experience, live by what your senses are revealing and the information you're getting from other people, not what your mind is telling you, not all these predictions your mind is making, but living by what your senses are revealing to you about the world, right? We would do these things, make these predictions, have the experience, and then get real world social feedback. And once I started doing that, I started realizing all these fears I have about myself, about being stupid, dumb, strange, ugly, worthless. Like, people are going to think everything I have to say is just moronic. I started to realize everyone shares those fears. And so if everyone shares those fears, then it can't possibly be true about all of us. We're not all dumb and strange and stupid and ugly.
Yeah, but everybody else is wrong, but not me.
Well, I got so much data in that class.
Okay.
That I would say things and think they're stupid. And someone else would say, I was really actually interested in what you have to say. And these weren't therapists that I was paying for. That was the cool kid in school who doesn't need to be nice to me. He could have been a total dick.
So it was almost like, I mean, because I'm kind of curious, right? So if you're someone with extroversion and social anxiety, and you sort of feel this like impotent drive to do more, to act more, to engage with your environment, maybe be inspiring, to accomplish more. Because when I think about the people that I've worked with that are sort of in that vein too, I think there is this drive to like be outside of your shell.
Yes.
Like you really long for it, right?
Yes.
What I'm kind of curious about is like, it sounds like this class for you was basically like forced exposure therapy where you had to, I mean, you didn't have a choice. You had to put yourself out there again and again and again and again. What I'm kind of curious about is for people who aren't forced into that real world information, which conflicts with their thoughts. Like I think people will sort of put themselves out there like once or twice, right? But the ratio of thoughts in my head to real world experiences is really unfavorable.
Yeah.